ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
A lot of people have been throwing the B word around lately.
The entire AI industry is a bubble primed to burst.
In July 2025, tech companies' share of the S&P 500 reached its highest level since the dot-com bubble 25 years ago, and that really didn't go very well.
The NASDAQ index falling more than 200 points.
So what happened last time, and what can it tell us about what's going on with AI today? I'm Matt Bevan, and on my show, if you're listening, we give you the backstories behind the big stories.
After feverish speculation, Barnaby Joyce has finally confirmed he'll join One Nation. The former Deputy Prime Minister says there has been no more considered and serious decision, and that he sees Pauline Hanson as a fellow traveller. So, was it the Sandwich Press Wagyu steak that won him over? And does a taxpayer-funded family trip to the snow pass the pub test? That's the question dogging Communications Minister Annika Wells this week. Welcome to Politics Now. Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis.
And I'm Jacob Greber. I'm not in a pub. I'm not even at the
you
kitchen
hate
table.
The pub test. You hate it.
I'm just skeptical that, you know, a gang of people well lick it up. I mean, and I'm not judging people who do that. I do it myself. Have ever made a good decision?
No. I have to admit, I have been drunk in my life, and I have never made a good decision when drunk. I cannot think of
good
one.
Good at the time, though.
Yeah, but not a good decision. So I think you're right. The pub test is a problematic test. What test should we talk about then?
Yeah, others have suggested the kitchen table test.
Oh, it's daggy. No,
daggy.
I'm not into it.
The working families
table.
Test.
Oh, God, no. Just the common sense. And I know that's daggy too.
The Bureau of Common Sense. Yeah, what would the Bureau of Common Sense say?
All right, so the common sense test. We'll get into in relation to Annika Wells and the way that's all been going. I just want to say I've received a few messages about the shirt you wore on Insiders, which you also debuted for the Politics Now Party Room live show in Canberra. They're in favour, but they want to know, are you being trolled about it? Like, women get trolled if they wear elaborate things on television.
Well, for one thing, I haven't gone looking for reactions online or anything like that because I don't think that's a good idea. But I can say, because he was on the show, on the Insider show on Sunday morning, the Prime Minister was quite jealous of the shirt.
Yeah, he would be.
He just wore a boring blue one.
Well, that's his whole kind of Mr. Stability vibe, isn't it? Doesn't want to freak people out with a shirt, although there was the Joy Division T-shirt, but that's a whole other podcast.
But I'm glad you like the shirt, PK. I presume
I love the shirt.
You know, yeah, it was fun wearing it. It's Christmas, man. We got to lighten up a bit.
That's my whole vibe. It's like we should all try harder. And so thank you, Jacob. Back to the politics and Barnaby Joyce's shirts. I've never really analysed his shirts. I think they're fine, but he's declared. He's declared his hand finally. It's the worst kept secret in Canberra. I think it's fair to say we all knew it would go this way, although I kept getting told even till late from some coalition types, Liberals and Nationals, maybe not. And he was
really?
Gone. Yeah,
really?
They were like, maybe, you know, they thought they were having, oh, come on. No, I'm saying to you, I didn't believe them.
No, you didn't believe it.
Because
but I mean, come on. This has been such a melodrama for weeks and weeks and weeks. It's clear as day this was where it was going to land. And it has officially been announced really like not even an hour ago, maybe a bit over an hour ago.
Yeah, from we're, when recording we're recording this Monday morning.
Tamworth 88.9, I think I've got that right, the local Tamworth radio station, not an ABC channel, but he's gone on and been in the studio there with Pauline Hanson, and they've made the big announcement, as you say. We've been talking about it for months and months and months, the build-up. We can get into this. He's put out a statement which I think has some really interesting elements.
Tell me, what was most interesting?
Well, so he opens with, quote, "There has been no more considered and serious decision than the one I make today to join One Nation." So that's a big decision he's made today. It's more important than any other decision he's made. I'll leave it at that. Mm-hmm. The other interesting thing is, so I've been saying for a while, and I think I said it to you a few weeks ago on the podcast, I've never quite understood the allure of One Nation for Barnaby when it comes to immigration, when it comes to the way that One Nation talks about levels of immigration and the nature of immigration. I've always felt that didn't gel with who Barnaby was. I got it on energy policy, One Nation. He's on the same page as them. He thinks it's all a load of bunkum and we shouldn't be doing it. But here's what he's saying on this topic. We've fallen for the fallacy that we can have divergent objectives within a population, but a common purpose as a nation. Yada, yada, yada. As a nation, we can have multiple faiths, race, and colour, but not multiple cultures. I think that's quite a big statement from Barnaby, and it's a new one. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's huge. I think that's right. And I think it is different to what we've heard from him before, right? Like it shows a really, like, that is not what he used to say, right? Like, I think actually on those issues, race was not his thing. That's what I really
want to say.
It
just didn't feel on brand, did it, that stuff, back
no,
in the day?
No, it wasn't
his thing.
The
National Party has a very broad constituency, it has to be said, particularly in regional areas.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of multicultural constituency, it's sometimes not recognised of the National Party by people who don't look into them that carefully, but they do. They actually do attract voters from different backgrounds. So he never used to talk like that because that would have not been great for those voters. But now that he's switched, he's definitely signed up fully to that One Nation messaging. I think it's a significant shift in terms of the lay of the land on the political right in Australia. He says he's going to run for the New South Wales Senate. That will presumably, if he succeeds in winning that Senate spot, will come almost directly at the cost of a Nationals seat, I would have thought, all things being equal. And then he is, you know, one of the most senior people in a political party that has great ambitions. They want to copy what Nigel Farage is sort of doing in the in the UK, where if you had an election at the moment, they'd probably win 400 seats or some such. That's certainly what the polls were saying a few months ago about the Farage movement. Is it realistic to think this might actually be the start of something similar, PK, do you think?
I think it is the start of something. I don't think that's an exaggeration, because there is a growing trend towards this sort of politics. We know One Nation is polling very well. I think while Barnaby Joyce has become mocked by some people in the community, and, you know, he's had many high-profile incidents that have led to that, some of his own making, of course. Equally, don't forget, he is still a good communicator when he's on message. Mm. Like, you know what I mean? Mm. When he's on well. I mean, as a communicator, again, I don't want to be misinterpreted. He can hit the points. He does have a way of communicating. And so that, I think his recruitment is very helpful for One Nation and its future growth. But you ask me, you know, will we see the same sorts of things as potentially what might be going on in the UK? Clearly, the rise of Trump in the US. Look, you know, people have heard us say this 3,000 times, but we're going to say it again. Our electoral system makes it more difficult. The actual voting system itself, our preferential voting system, our compulsory voting system, these things almost sort of protect against extremes. And so I believe that we now will see, potentially, you never know, you could stuff it all up, but potentially if he one day became the leader of One Nation and Pauline Hanson does then move aside, like that's the future, if that does eventuate, I think you could see more Senate spots being won. And, you know, could they become, this is the sort of future I see, rather than a party of government in the lower house, would they become potentially bigger and be more like the Greens in terms of balance of power role? That's how we should be thinking. That's where I see the potential for this. And don't think that's not a big deal, guys who are listening. That is a big deal. Think about the power that the Greens just had in that role, right? They were able, for the environment laws, to pass those laws to change it more in their flavour. Think about a future situation where one nation has the balance of power all of a sudden, because, you know, a figure like Joyce is able to galvanize more votes for them and get more seats, and all of a sudden they had more power. Can you imagine the kind of push they would be making to change legislation? That's where I see it going, rather than are we going to one day have a one nation prime minister. I think it's still pretty unlikely if you look at where the votes are in our major metropolitan cities. I still don't think that's where it's going. But I do think that you could see a more sort of right-leaning parliament with more influence. What do you think?
I absolutely agree with you there. The idea that they're sort of shooting for the prime ministership, I think under our system, as you've pointed out, is pretty unlikely. You never say never, but that's really, really not what this is about. And remember, Barnaby, when he first got into the Senate for Queensland in the early noughties, and you'll remember because you were covering Canberra closely at that point, Barnaby became the swing vote in the Senate. Famously, when Howard was trying to get through his industrial relations legislation, it had been a 30-40 year project by the Liberal Party to get this kind of workplace legislation into law. He had won that election in the lower house easily, and he also had a Senate that was very, very friendly. But it turned out Barnaby was the key swing vote, and he was a recalcitrant National. He fought all the way through. He got all sorts of leverage out of Howard at the time, and that's really where he wants to go back to. He wants to be back in that position. And he might be doing it, you know, with an Anthony Albanese after the next election, if the project that they're currently embarked on, which is to really build up those One Nation seats in the Senate. And then it depends on what everyone else's numbers do. But it's that is by far not an outrageous scenario, is it? The other question, I guess, is are there any others in the wings that are lining up to do a similar defection from the coalition, whether it's Liberals or Nats, to One Nation? And I think there's a bit of scuttlebutt around on that. And that seems to be what's happening here, very, very slowly, gradually, a shift to an Australian kind of reform movement.
Mm. Yeah, I think more defections look like they could be on the cards. That's as you say, the scuttlebutt, and, you know, I've heard that too. And that will be an increasing problem. So, you know, we're recording. We've had the response now already from David Littleproud. He is the leader of the Nationals. He is, I think it's fair to say, I think Barnaby makes it quite clear, actually, in his statement that, you know, Littleproud himself is one of the reasons this has happened, and the absolute breakdown in this relationship, which I think it takes two to tango, my friends. So, you know, there will be people, watch this space too, in the Nationals questioning, you know, the way Littleproud handled all of this as well, because if he has contributed, and I don't think he's entirely responsible, that's not fair, but contributed clearly to the breakdown which led to now this figure who, you know, has kind of an ability to communicate, can take votes from his own party, that's a problem. That is not what you want to have on your watch as the leader of the Nationals. And yet he does. He said it's disappointing. It breaks the contract he made with constituents. You know, he could be as disappointed as he wants, but it's a real thing now, and it's really happening. And it's a problem.
And Barnaby's actually not the first to go on David Littleproud's watch, it has to be noted. Jacinta Namper-Jimpa Price defected to the Liberal Party, so that's perhaps not as big a defection as going to One Nation, but it is still someone who's no longer in that party room. And the other one was Andrew Gee last term becoming an independent. So there is some heat going to come on David Littleproud internally about that. How is it that these, I guess you could call them, the energetic sort of troublemaking voices don't have a home in the National Party. They're actually leaving. That's a problem because the National Party's always had mavericks, and it's been something that the party's been able to manage. That's breaking down, and that's going to be a worry for him.
It's a big worry for their movement, and, you know, the splintering of the right and the way that now looks is a big issue, I think, for the right. I think there is a proper existential crisis going on in the right. to conservative politics, to the future of liberalism, to the coalition, to you know, the radicalisation going on in some parts of the Liberal Party. All of this, I think, is very significant and should not be, you know, should not be downplayed as it, in terms of its significance and its potential. If it is kind of electorally poisoned, as some people argue, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying, you know, to make Labor the sort of, you know, the party of government, which is what the Prime Minister wants. Like, this is all helping him, I think, in some ways, continue that. Look, I mentioned Labor, so we have to talk about Labor. And one particular Labor story, which I think is creating a lot of problems for the Labor Party, and I say this in this way. You know, we got towards the end of the year on a high. PM even has a lovely wedding. We were talking about this on the Party Room Live, right? You know, wins a thumping election. He gets his environment laws through, living large. Few little pieces of bad news, not insignificant, like bad inflation numbers. But, you know, things are looking all right. And then the curious case of the communications and sports minister, Annika Wells, who is a Queenslander, a young mum, a millennial, in cabinet she's been promoted to, I think a very talented communicator, has a lot of great attributes, is very much the future of the Labor Party, you would think. But she's done a couple of things which are really coming back to bite her. The first one we talked about last week, spending nearly $100,000 on flights to New York for two staffers and herself to talk up the social media stuff. I believe, I just want to say this on the record, she should not be entirely held to account for that decision, which I think was a poor one. Clearly, the Prime Minister's office was involved. They all were involved. It is unfair to hold her to account for being told, come on down, right? So, first one. But then the travel stories, which I do think she needs to be held to account for in terms of the optics, and this one in particular. I've written a column on it. I do think it's problematic. So she charged taxpayers nearly $3,000 on travel allowances and flights so her husband and children could join her for a weekend at the Thredbo ski resort. She was there doing work for the Paralympics Australia Adaptive Festival. She clearly was doing work as sports minister, uncontested. It's clearly within the rules that she can bring family for reunion. Again, uncontested. But my goodness, there are judgment calls in politics, right? And I bet, this is just a bet, I don't have this, but she would be wishing she had gone into their bank account, their offset account, I'm sure they have one like we do, and just pulled $3,000 off and paid for those bloody flights, because this story, it just reeks of privilege because it's a ski resort. Sorry, I have to say this, Jacob. Hello? I have a good income. I have taken my kids to ski resorts. I am not pretending.
Oh, PK. PK, you're breaking my heart here. As a kid who grew up in Switzerland, I can't join you on this reverse snobbery against ski resorts. It's a human right in some parts of the world to ski.
I used to see skiing in this country as the bastion of the rich. That's what I did until I thought I'm going to get my own skis, right? Aspirational.
And then you realised it's the bastion of the broke.
It's the bastion of the broke, but it's also one of the most amazing things you'll ever do. I'm very pro skiing.
I'm not going to argue against it. I think it looks really bad, and she's within the rules, yada yada. All those things are fine. It's that sense that you're pushing the rules to the limit and you're having a good time doing it. Tony Burke famously refunded money to the Commonwealth. I think when he took his family to Uluru, he felt again that that wasn't a good look, and so he then repaid that money. We'll see what Wells does. But I mean, just to play devil's advocate here, I mean, skiing is an important industry for a region that otherwise doesn't generate all that much income. It gets people out into national parks. It's good to teach your kids about the outdoors. Is it all that terrible? I say that as a skier, of course.
Yeah. The point is, absolutely, she should see her kids. I think it's absolutely reasonable. Sometimes when you're working on the weekends, I mean, I've flown my kids to meet me for when I'm away for work, but I've paid for the flights. You know what I mean? Like, so they can join me, but I've paid for the flights. And I'm sure lots of people listening have done the same, because you're like, I'm here. I wouldn't mind seeing the people I actually made and would like to spend more time with, but my job means that I'm often away. I understand big jobs are hard. Like, I'm not saying you should cry for anyone who has a big job, but you know what I'm saying? Like, they take you away from the people you love, and they need you, these people, sometimes. Like, you know, you're raising teenagers. They need you. Annika Wells has young kids. She's got twins. They need her. It makes sense to me that she wants to take them to the snow. It's not about the snow, people. It's about the optics as a senior minister to be doing that. And so right now, as we record this, there are more stories emerging, and I cannot tell you how many are emerging. This one, for instance, I'm just going to quickly say it, that she claimed $8,500 for a family travel trip to Melbourne during the AFL Grand Finals. So all of this may be within the rules. I'm not sure. I haven't fact-checked that one, but maybe within the rules, right? The point is the optics, and the optics are terrible. It is indisputable. And the reason I set this whole conversation up with how well the government was going is they don't need this. This is not a good look for them.
Well, here's the one of the reasons why it's not a good look, PK. And actually, last week, there was also an interesting little revelation that David Pocock, the ACT senator, got out of the Future Fund, where the Future Fund had sent an executive assistant to the United States, I believe on two separate trips, to find out about hotels for the organisation. And as Pocock said, what were they doing there? Testing the firmness of the beds. And those were $20,000 trips. So it's just this kind of money that gets spent, for a lot of people, that is an eye-watering sum of money. And the political problem for the government, and I think this is what you're alluding to, is the government sitting there looking at things like the energy bill rebate, that have been in place now for a couple of years since the end of 2022. They keep rolling them over. They keep adding them to them and extending them. The government actually wants to get out of that business of these quarterly rebates. They've indicated that they've never, as recently as yesterday, the Prime Minister made clear on Insiders that it was never meant to be a permanent thing. So you're going to take away something like that that's helping struggling families, and then they're reading these headlines. That's the problem for the government.
Exactly. And so there is one more thing I think worth mentioning in relation to all of this. First one is the PM doubling down on Insiders. You were on the couch defending the spending, the 100 grand, which clearly, you know, his office had signed off on. But then also within, you know, that her spending on travel had all been within the guidelines. Again, people are right to ask about the guidelines then. You know, I know that it allows for family reunion, but I don't know, maybe that needs to be revisited. Maybe that will be one thing that comes out here. Because clearly every time someone does a family reunion, if it's at any spot that isn't Canberra, everyone gets outraged. Have you noticed?
But I think that's the problem, isn't it? Like if you're allowed to have a reunion with your family, what's the next part of the rule got to say? It can't be anywhere, you know, too flashy, or it can't be.
Well, that's kind of the unwritten rule.
You can go to a hotel and sort of sit there and look at each other across the table for 2 days. You're not allowed to do anything fun.
Take Uno. That's what we do.
Go skiing, people. It's great.
It should, but they can. They can just also pay for their own flights.
I think you're right, but I think look, you can tell this stuff matters to politicians. They're acutely aware of it. And the best example of that is probably the Prime Minister. As was pointed out on Insiders, he has just had that wedding. He paid for everything, including the straws, it had to be said. He had to pay for the staff. He kept it small. Everyone who arrived at the wedding came in private taxis, we're told. They didn't use comm cars. So they went out of their way to demonstrate that they weren't somehow, you know, filling their boots with entitlements. He paid for it himself. And it was also, we had that long discussion last week, I think, or the week before, about security and why it was kept quiet, partly because once it would have become public, then the cost of securing that event would have got so large that probably even the Prime Minister wouldn't have had the cash to pay for the overtime.
I think that's all right as a contrast. Good point. But I just want to say one more thing about the Annika Wells story, which I think is worth mentioning. And it was mentioned on the couch on Insiders, but it's something I've picked up too. This is so obviously, so clearly a hit job. And I believe, if I would not be surprised, and certainly a lot of Labor people believe this, an internal hit job.
Well, I'll level with you.
Someone is out to get her.
I'll level with you. I've not had anyone come to me and say, hey, you should look at this, you should look at that to do with the minister. So I can't vouch for it. But there's a lot of stuff now coming out in quick succession.
Study it. So we've got quick succession, every day a new hit, a range of different journalists. I've been in this business for a long time, right? So have you. That's what we do. This is the way it works. This is the way the sausage is made. This is an internal hit job if I've ever seen one. I really think what we're seeing here, I'm not like, is someone is out to destroy Annika Wells. But one more thing I want to say, because it's absolutely important to say it, you cannot be destroyed if you're bulletproof.
So I don't know how she gets out of it. I mean, I think you either cough up a whole lot of cash.
That's the first way, but that doesn't save you.
I heard a great phrase last week, and it comes from America, where if you're going to eat crow, you want to eat crow when it's still warm, as in do it sooner rather than later. Mm. The coalition is definitely smelt blood, and other ministers have gone for less, it has to be said. So they'll be pushing very, very hard on this front. And of course, she's trying to land this just globally significant, massive social media ban at the same time. The government would much rather be talking about that.
Oh, because it's electorally popular, and all of a sudden now they're just talking about travel rorts. And, you know, as the people who've prosecuted travel rorts and the stories around them in the previous government when Labor was in opposition, they know it hurts. I mean, that's kind of why people love talking about it, right? Like, because it does hurt, because it's that whole sort of fat cat, you know, noses in the trough. They don't care about our money. We work hard. We pay our taxes. These idiots are, you know, living large. Now, I will add, though, that I'm sure that Annika Wells is not the only person in that parliament to have used her travel entitlements for nice things that are maybe within the rules, but that's my point about her being targeted. She's the only one that I can see is being targeted. But I'm just going to say this and leave this with our listeners. Jacob, that doesn't mean you're all safe, politicians. You know, you could be next, because that's how this stuff works. It's like dominoes, isn't it? That's how it works.
Yeah, well, we've seen, I mean, there have been travel scandals before. Back in the 90s, there was a famous one which went on for a long, long time. And one thing that happens eventually is they turn into a kind of mutually assured destruction where people dig up dirt on all sorts of other people. And I think it's unfortunate because it does lend a perception, which I think is not fair, that politicians are all in it to fill their boots with largesse. I actually don't think that's why most of them do it.
No, and even like in Annika Wells' defence, she works very hard. She's a very smart minister. She's an up-and-comer. Like, it's not fair to just say she's, you know, and again, it is within the rules. It's more about political judgment of realising, that's my point, always assume there are snakes ready to get you. So do the right thing, because the snakes will bite you and you will have to go to the hospital or die of the venom.
There we go. That's a tagline to live by, isn't it? Yeah.
Dive
and it is
them.
Summer too. They're everywhere.
They are. Keep away from them. Hey, Jacob, love hanging out with you. Thanks for joining me.
So much fun. Talk soon.
And we will also have a very special episode on the housing crisis. We've been promising it, delivered to you with the friend of the show, Tom Crowley. So look out for that. And if you have a question for us, please send a short voice note to thepartyroom@abc.net.au and Fran and I will answer it. See you, Jacob.
All the best.